Good morning, Gloucester. Very special podcast today. I think I say it's a very special podcast every time. That's kind of my thing. But we have very special guest today, and I mean that from the heart. We have Mr. Effervescent, Toby Pett is here.
Good morning, Gloucester.
We have City Councilor Melissa Cox.
Good morning, Gloucester.
And we have one of the all-time great Gloucester citizens, Rick Dowsett.
Good morning, Gloucester.
Yes, a lot of fun today. First of all, I want to talk about, because there's an event that has happened. I don't know, do you know how long the Pride Drive's gone on for?
28 years.
This is an incredible, I wish someone put together the numbers of how much money Pride Drive has put back into awesome community things.
Just about $1.1 million.
That's incredible.
Over the 28 years.
That is incredible. That is, and everybody has a good time, right?
It's a great day. We'll be the last Sunday in April up at Stageport Park. Lots and lots of non-for-profits benefiting. People who aren't involved with non-for-profits should still come. Should definitely come. Pick up a pledge sheet. Write down 1, 2, 15 of your favorite organizations in town, your favorite causes. We're going to have...
How do they whack the money up?
How do they what?
How do they whack the money up? On your pledge sheet, does it say this is where I want the money to go to?
You can say which organizations you want them. Yeah. So if you put one, it'll be one. Unless you tell us to divide a certain way, it'll just be divided evenly. So if you have three, whatever you bring in will be divided by three.
Brilliant.
So
is there like a party afterwards or a party before?
Party before, party afterwards. Registration starts at 10 o'clock in the morning. We're up at Stageford Park, everything is set up. We got coffee, donuts, you know, all that type of thing. And the walk itself starts at noon. Everyone goes for the stroll. We got grills, DJ, big inflatables from Primetime Party Zone.
Awesome.
Face painting, balloon animals. Melissa's going to do a little dance. She doesn't know about that yet. And but it's a good time. Great day for civic pride. And raise a lot of needed resources for great causes in town.
It's a great way to kick off, like, you know, the start of all, because the winter is kind of everybody a little bit dormant, even though Gloucester probably has 10 times more than our surrounding communities as far as events during the winter. But then the insane, like, community organization events kick off, and Pride Drive is usually the one that really gets things going.
Definitely.
You know?
It's just the sign of spring when Pride strides. Mm. You start seeing the little walking men and the signs around town, and people are asking for pledges for their nonprofit. If you're a nonprofit in Gloucester, Rockport, Manchester, surrounding area, you are insane if you don't partake in this event. It's just so easy, so rewarding. You get to see people for the first time coming out of winter and hibernation, and it's great. It's at Stageport Park. The view's amazing. The food's good. We have a lot of places that donate chowder, and we get pizza, and we have burgers and dogs, and it's just a really, really fun event. And it's just like the social activity to kick off the season.
So people can pick up the pledge sheets right there, right?
People should pick up the pledge sheets ahead of time.
Okay. And here, I'm going to read off the list of places where they can pick them up.
Sure.
Santander Bank, Sawyer Free Library, Cape Ann Animal Aid, Cape Ann Chamber of Commerce, the YMCA, Cape Ann Photography. Where's Cape Ann Photography?
Over on Washington Street, just past...
across from George's?
No. Over on Washington Street, down back towards Lanesville.
Oh, okay.
Or in the left-hand side after... Will Arrest.
Okay. Cape Ann Savings Bank, Bank Gloucester, First Ipswich Bank, Cape Ann Lanes. And you can also visit the website. And I know this is going to be very difficult to remember this, because it's very confusing. www.gloucesterpridesdrive.com. So I know it's tricky. It's a lot of tricks in there.
We definitely encourage people to go to the website, because we have updates on there. The pledge sheet you can download.
You can print out a pledge sheet.
Yep.
Yeah, no brainer.
No.
Celebrate.
All the nonprofits are listed. So
yeah.
And if there's other like Melissa was saying, if there's other nonprofits or other, it doesn't have to be a 501c organization. It could be boosters for a school. It could be the friends of an organization.
Is it too late if you're one of these organizations to get involved?
Absolutely not.
No.
Absolutely not.
Really?
We've got 3 weeks or so until the walk, and.
We do. we do like them to register in advance, so because we put them on all the signage.
Yeah.
So again, we like for them to register in advance and make a sign to promote them, but it's not necessary. If you show up the day of with the pledge sheets, you know.
So if anything, right?
Yeah.
If anything that we can talk about that might be a little bit different in this podcast. If you're a community organization and you are looking to raise money, this is a fun way to say it's a group, Cub Scout group, mm-hmm. whatever, right? Whatever.
Yeah.
Come on out, you know, go to the website, get your pledge sheet, and get involved.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
All right, there you go. Lost a Prize Drive, April 26th. Walk begins at 12 noon. Pledge sheets accepted beginning at 10 a.m. at Stage Fort Park. Boom, chakalaka. Love it. Good stuff. Melissa, I want to thank you because Rick probably gets up a little on the earlier side. I know I was here at 4 o'clock offloading a bait truck, but it's hard early. You made the pledge to come here early, 7 a.m.
I even showered.
You showered. You even have makeup on. Your hair is not disheveled. You look fantastic. So thank you for coming. What I wanted to talk about a little bit because I know. This the process of the budget.
Mm-hmm.
This is what it all the season of the process of the budget, right?
Yep. The city staff right now is working with the administration on presenting the budget to the mayor and to the administration. So from there, they compile it, and the city council receives it early May. And the schedule is already posted on the city website for the City Council Subcommittee of Budget and Finance. Our schedule is already set. I set that a couple months ago. And what happens is the mayor presents a budget to us in early May, and then we meet with each department one-on-one to go over their requests and, you know, see if there's anything that, you know, we go over their budget, their salaries, the
office expense. Can I ask one question?
Yep.
At this point, when the mayor submits, it's a proposed budget. Is that what you
yes.
call it? A proposed budget. Does it have to be? Does there have to be equilibrium there?
I mean, it
does
should it always be balanced.
So,
yeah.
Oh, so it's a balanced budget.
Yes. And
so it's up to you to. Okay, so go forward from there.
So we look at the different departments and we listen to the departments, and you know, a department may need a piece of equipment that they have that's expiring. So we'll look at the revenues, and we've done this in the past where we've raised revenue projections. In the past, the revenues were projected on the low side, and looking at past numbers, we've raised the amount of revenue that we think we're going to get in to maybe help this department get a piece of equipment. Mm-hmm. So it's a balance like that, and then towards the end of the budget season, mid-June, after we've met with all the different departments and talked about revenue and everything, we have a public hearing. So definitely I encourage public participation, not only just at the public hearing, but at these meetings. And again, the agenda is posted on the website, to come and attend and listen and learn. And at the end of the budget season, when we've met with all the different departments, I will reserve an evening for the public to come in, those that want to participate, and suggest ways to adjust the budget or, you know, come to a better spending.
Is there ever a department that doesn't ask for more than what they're scheduled for? I can't imagine.
Well, everybody's requesting, the administration requests that the departments to turn in a level funding budget.
Mm-hmm.
We go without items every year. Certain departments go without stuff because we don't feel that we can handle the cost of it. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people that want more.
I would think, like,
but
you
work
know,
with
I,
what they it, have.
Does it always? I guess the question is, like, is it a game? Is it certain? Is it a game? Like, okay, we're going to ask for it's X is what our level is. We're going to ask for X plus 20%, hoping that we get X plus 10%.
Not really. Most of the department heads are really, really good. Actually, all the department heads are really good about submitting, you know,
reasonable
budgets.
Okay.
The school is a little different because they're a bottom line budget, and that's kind of hard to explain, but they get a lump sum and they can do whatever they want to with that money.
Yeah.
You know, they have to figure out how to best spend that. We cannot really adjust their budget too much. We can add to their budget, but we can't take away from their budget. So,
and then you have the teachers union.
Yeah.
So now who, you say the schools, now that's the school committee. The school committee gets X amount of dollars and then they figure out how they're going to whack it up, right?
Correct.
So that goes down to that.
Yeah. Unlike a city department, they say we need $40,000 for salary, $500 for office supplies. We project, you know, $400,000 in revenues from parking meters, or, you know, something like that. But with the school, we give them the money. If they wanted to spend, if we give them a $500,000 budget and they wanted to spend $499,000 on one salary, they can do it.
Wow. Okay.
I mean,
it's all in their hands.
It's all in their hands.
Basically, that's the point. Yeah. Can I ask you a question about parking meters and a couple different questions on parking meters? What's the status of I-4C2 lot? Now, I know there was, wasn't there questions that you can't legitimately use that for a park because that's not a marine industrial use, or are they allowed to charge? Do they have a kiosk there to take?
There is a kiosk there. So we petitioned the state to allow us to use it as a paid parking lot for, I believe it was, the permission we got was for 5 years with the ability to extend it during the time in which we're trying to sell it or promote it to find a use for it. And actually, the seafood show that was in Boston a few weeks ago, maybe 3 or 4 weeks ago,
we actually had
a lot of people come into Gloucester and we showed them that lot. So it's very exciting. We have some people that are interested, and you know, it's just so we do have permission to use it as a parking lot, but it's not for an infinite amount of time.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're trying to promote it, we're trying to sell it, we're trying to do something with it, we're trying to get interest. I personally don't want to stay in a parking lot for the rest of its days. You know, we won't be able to do that. We receive certain permission for a certain period of time, and that's it.
You know where I'd love to see a parking lot? I'd like to see the Y at Fuller, and I'd like to see the Y be a big parking lot. That's what I'd like.
Parking lot or a parking building?
Parking building.
Parking garage. I think. That's what,
yeah, that's
what you're here.
That's general public, I believe, would have that consensus as well from what I hear. But got to go through the process, jump through the hoops, cut the red tape, all that good stuff.
What is, okay, can you give me, what is the argument against, what's the argument against Fuller being used for the Y and like a mixed use kind of thing up there? What would the antagonist say that the argument, because I can't see any bad downsides to that.
Well, I think in the beginning it was that it was a school and it should be used as a school. So with the school committee releasing it to us as surplus, that ship's gone and people need to let that go, unfortunately. So now it's not that any of us are against the Y moving up to Fuller. We just need to make sure that we're doing it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, it's also a time-consuming effort to make sure that the city doesn't have any needs to use that building before we request an RFP or request for a proposal to sell the building in portion or in whole. So
the planning
and development committee.
It's a big space, though. It could be other things, too.
It is, and it could be used for a combined use. Yeah. And that's what the consensus was when we put the ballot question out.
Well, so, it's nice to put it on the ballot question because then you kind of get, you know, the public. It's always nice to include the public. So
yeah, I'm all for public input. I think
Rick, do you
really
want to comment on that? I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot. You don't have to.
No, it's fine. I think a lot of things that we tried as the Y, we had tried to talk to folks about is that, you know, because I'll get questions every day. People are like, when are you going to break ground? When are you guys going to start building? It's like there is a long process and there's due diligence on the part of the council and the city. And there were a long time, there were a lot of misconceptions that the Y wanted to be gifted the building or that we were going to use all 186,000 square feet. And it's just, that's not the case. We'd be a postage stamp on the amount that's possible up there. So I think that's when a group of folks, for us, we've gotten together and said, you know, when an RFP comes out, and we have had a little bit of talk with Wendover Construction and Sam Parks folks about looking at that. The whole campus is kind of a, well, it was a campus, you know, to kind of address that, the referendum question that had come and said, you know, city offices, retail, some sort of, could be housing, could be hotel, not hotel, could be the Y, whether or not the the theater complex, part saving part of the auditorium.
A lot of people talk about that auditorium.
So I think it all depends upon, you know, yeah, as it gets a little bit further down the road, what the RFP says, but also, you know, there'll probably be a lot of seats around the table for people who want to fundraise and for a specific cause. But my cause and our cause for the Y is for a Y. So, you know, we're not in the building retail business. We're not in the building offices business. We're right in the Y business. So as we're part of that team of folks that if there's an RFP and if we're fortunate enough to get it,
you'd like to be a piece of it.
That's at that point we go off and we build our Y or look to figure out what portion of the Y goes on and let Sam and Lee and people who do that sort of thing take it from there with to serve the purposes.
Well, so from my perspective, so here are a couple of the why I think I like the idea. And one related to Salem, when Salem built that parking garage downtown, within a year, I think they opened up something like, I don't know if it was between 30 and 50 new restaurants opened up within a year.
Yeah.
And I mean, it really revitalized their downtown. So if the Y, that, so it's a double thing, because when the Y is in session, there's a lot of parking spaces that get taken up downtown, right? Yeah. Because people go into the Y.
Yeah.
But a lot of people get to walk there too. It's really nice to have that space,
yeah,
be able to be walked, you know, be able to walk to there for urban folks. But, you know, so it's almost like a double bonus of opening up all that parking spot for people that are going to go shop downtown and stuff like that. And so.
Well, I think one of the things, for parking, two things I want to say. At that location, 71 Middle Street that we have, if we were to take the building completely down and build a parking garage, you know, back of a cocktail napkin drawing, we understand there's somewhere between 250 and 300 cars that could park on that spot, because you come in and use the natural elevation.
Yeah.
So you're building, the parking spaces wouldn't get eaten up by ramps.
That's incredible.
All inside. And that might be, it's a real rough,
yeah.
You know, but still the thought of that is exciting to add that amount of parking and accessibility to downtown. As far as walking, the full, and it's not, I didn't measure it off, but I'd say that the fullest site would be probably equidistant from Burnham's Field that the Y is now,
right,
or from the Sergeant Street area, because I live in
right
Sergeant Street.
Right.
So the ability to walk, you can come up over Millet Street, Trask Street, Warner,
right,
all up through there, Green Street. You know, if kids are walking in the neighborhood,
yeah,
it's not that far off. And we'd still be able to offer. We've got a couple of vans and our mini bus. So as far as offering a shuttle or getting kids there, getting folks there, I don't think that's an issue. I mean, it is. If you're driving, yep, we're going to be a little bit distant from downtown because you can't cut through, you know, and you shouldn't cut through, but you'll have to go around the rotary and come up through the highway and that type of thing. But as far as being able to walk, ride your bike.
There's a lot of people that walk to Market Basket, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
A lot of people walk there. You see all through that Green Street playground and stuff like that. Is that Green Street playground?
Yeah.
So there you go. That's the take. There's the take from the man from the Y and the take from City Councilor Melissa Cox. We want to talk, we didn't get to the main meat of what we want to talk about. We have some numbers. I asked Melissa to get me some numbers on the wind turbines. Rick, can I borrow your glasses again? As I get older. Oh, Lord, here we go. So Melissa was really gracious in getting this information for me. And we are looking at 2014. And
we're going to get fiscal
2014. And I'm going to say these numbers, and within, look in the show notes of this podcast, and because Melissa's going to give me some further explanation of what these numbers actually mean. So turbine one, it's broken down into turbine one and turbine two. Turbine one production for 2014, fiscal year 2014 was 4,512,469 kilowatt hours. Turbine two, 4,039,678 kilowatt hours. And for both of them together, National Grid net metering credit payments, $1,384,538.63. Now, we're not positive what portion of that the city actually gets. It says here, tier one discount, 20, which would be 20% of that total number, is $276,907. So, but we're going to get, okay, it says over here in the right-hand column, through 2/19/14, $185,597 in revenue. So, but we're going to, we have all these numbers here. Melissa's going to actually give me a little paragraph explaining what right. the bottom line to the city of Gloucester was.
Yes.
So we don't want to make a statement that does that makes us sound like idiots.
What I can say,
there we go.
Well, not on this topic anyway.
Yeah.
The kilowatt per hour production is 9% higher than last year's, and the amount of the credit is 36% higher because of the increased production. But more importantly, the increase of the kilowatt hour credit rate, which moves with the market. So it fluctuates. Our revenue is definitely going to fluctuate because of the market.
Well, National Grid last fall, because I followed this with the whole electricity series things that I've been doing, the National Grid got approved to go, it was a huge jump, up to 16.273 cents per kilowatt hour.
Yeah.
So in that case, if they're basing the money that we're getting back based on a big jump, then that actually benefits the city, right?
Correct.
Because we're getting money based on that number, I think.
Yeah, we're also paying more for that number, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
So so what the city's paying. So in a vacuum, the city would be getting more of a credit back, but that's only more of a credit based on a higher bill.
But if we're basing it off of what that is producing...
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess you're right. It's zero sum gain maybe. But we'll find we're going to get the further clarification, which is going to be awesome.
Yes.
Because I was happy that we asked this question because no one else had really asked it since
we
saw the check.
Well, a lot of people ask the question, but they're not asking the right people or they're just throwing it out there saying, "Boy, I wish I had that number." All you have to do is ask. Any of the city councilors have access to this data. So
well, and I asked.
Yes, right?
Isn't that how information happens? You just yell it out in a coffee shop, and eventually it
becomes
the question swirls around the community, and eventually the
in the telephone game it goes from $20,000 to $750 million.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Right. Well, here's the check that we got that was posted back on March 11th, 2013, to the city of Gloucester from National Grid. For $102,915.93. We don't know exactly what that was for. So we're going to get, but we're going to go back to former Mayor Carolyn Kirk's, the Mayor's Desk article in the Gloucester Daily Times, where she stated the two turbines located at Gloucester Engineering property owned by Equity Industrial Partners in Blackburn Industrial Park will generate energy credits, which will be used to cover Gloucester's municipal electricity needs. In the process, the city conservatively anticipates saving $450,000 per year in energy costs. The city also will receive payments from the private operator of the turbines, starting at $40,000 per year with annual increases for the duration of the 25-year agreement. All told, city taxpayers will save a minimum of $11 million. So we're going to see where it stacks up. Because what I did back then was I earmarked this article and said, well, we need to revisit this next year to see where we come compared to that $450,000 estimate.
Right. And I'll get you further clarification on this. I know on what I have here from CFO Dunn, it says through February 19th, 2014, that we have a little over $185,000 in revenue. So
say that again. What was the dates between what and what?
2/19/14 We have 185,000 in revenue. So, and that was about a year ago. So we should be able to update that information for sure.
Awesome. Very cool. And I also want to note the poll that we ran back on this on that date back in, I think it was last, God, what was the date? Well, it was when this, it was right when this article came out from the mayor's desk. So the poll that we put on Good Morning Gloucester was, will the city of Gloucester get more or less than $450,000 in the first year of energy savings from the windmill? People were skeptical, apparently. It was 31% said that we would get more money than the $450,000 in the first year of energy savings from the windmill, and 69% said less. So these numbers are going to bear out who came out victorious in the poll.
Right. And understanding that question, too, is that before or after our discount? So, well, I don't know.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah. Well, we're going to find out. So there you go. We need to talk about dodgeball coming up. We can't thank Rick and his crew over at Camp Spindrift enough.
It's not just dodgeball. It's bikini and speedo. Dodgeball.
The World Championships, yes. to be precise.
Actually, yeah.
That's what it says on the sweatshirts this year.
The World Championships.
Because there really is no other.
There were the playoffs in Dubai, if I remember correctly. That was the Western Hemisphere Regional. I think it was at Eastern. I don't know.
Yes, North. Very exciting. I want to put a couple. We're begging the participants to take taxis and use Uber. Uber has offered us a free ride, one free ride if you sign up and use the discount code Cape Ann. I'll give you the link for that. But local cab companies just as well. There's gonna be a little less parking. We're not gonna be parking at all on Camp Spindrift. In their parking lot at all. It's going to be all down at Wingersheek, and there's going to be the Camp Spindrift for Y bus is going to be shuttling people back and forth, but it's going to be a whole lot easier. And we have the Uber says they're going to have cars down and available in our area. It's a really cool way to travel. But it's going to be great. We're going to raise money for great causes. We're actually, this year, we're going to carve out some money for Camp Spindrift, keep some money local. Since the inception, we gave to Next Step, which is a organization that helps children that have terminal, not children, young adults with terminal illness. So two awesome causes, and they kind of dovetail together because the Y does so many great things for the youth and. The Rockathon was already, wasn't it?
Rockathon was Martin Luther King Day weekend.
That might be the greatest event.
Yeah, we 43 teens, myself and another advisor, Chris Brayton. We were there 8 o'clock Saturday morning till 8 o'clock Sunday morning, rocking in rocking chairs. And
do you put on movies? How does it go?
We do 4 hours with electronics, 4 hours off. So that way we don't want, you know, we understand that you want to, you know, I would also want to watch a movie or play Words with Friends or whatever, but there's also time where there's, you know, card games, talking, conversation, it gets a little goofy, because you might imagine being cooped up.
What does that money go towards?
We raise, primarily we raise donations of canned food, or non-perishable food items. And then Open Door, St. Vincent de Paul Society, through the Open Door, and then directly to families and folks in need that are identified. So we raised over 25,000 items this year. The kids and Chris Brayton did a fantastic job. The 7 weeks leading up to 7 weeks leading up to the Rockathon, he and an army of teens were at the Shaw's Market, Stop and Shop.
Awesome.
Market Basket, just a real testimony to the generosity and the way folks come together in this community to help each other.
Yeah.
And but it was just shattered any amounts that we've gotten in the past.
Cool.
And so we've had some kids join leaders since then. We had a night at Laser Quest a couple of weeks ago, so we did an overnight, and the kids who joined after the fact, because it was just, you know, if you did the rockathon and you got the, each kid had to get 170 cans, 175 minimum.
Wow.
Three
that's
of the kids
big,
who've joined
since. That's a big number.
It's, it can be, but it's also, it's, you know, with 2 months to do it, and I think that's part of the lessons learned, and part of what we do with leaders is you got to learn how to advocate, and one of the hard things is to ask people for things for others in need, and to help kind of be able to give that elevator speech.
What another great thing that the Y does, I don't know if, are you guys still doing the in the summer they walk down Main Street and they with the bags and cleaning?
Hopefully. The clean team.
Clean team.
It's a...
One of the most highly visible, awesome, I think the greatest thing, one of the greatest things that the Y does, like the clean team, they have kids, they get paid, right?
The CDBG funding, it pays, so we can pay the teams. A lot of kids, it's their first job, and for a lot of kids, particularly with minimum wage going up, now it's $9 an hour, and it's going to continue to climb the next 2 years. The jobs that kids were getting, I want to say back in my day, and sound old, yeah, but jobs that kids were getting, you know, 20, 30 years ago at 16, 17, 18 years old, are now going to people in their 20s because they make $9 an hour, you know, or $9.50 or $10. So there's really not a lot of jobs, particularly even go younger for kids that are 14 and 15.
But it's so cool.
So,
I love that like they have the, you they're clearly identified, and they're walking down Main Street. They make a visible impact. They water the flowers in the flower boxes.
Yeah, we do some little bit of landscaping. We do
weed pulling every once in a while.
Weed pulling, sanding and burnishing the benches.
It's awesome.
A crew dedicated to watering the flowers.
And what I like about it is
trash.
The community involvement. I mean, you have these teens that are walking up and down Main Street, you know, helping take care of the city, getting paid to do it, have a learning experience, the interaction with the shop owners, the restaurants, stuff like that. I think it's amazing. And these shop owners take it upon themselves to make sure the kids are fed or watered or, you know.
Where does the funding come for that?
Community Development Block Grant money. So we apply every year to the city and through the HUD funding. So we're waiting for official word back for this year, in which case then applications and all that will be out. But generally it ends up, that pays directly for the kids, t-shirts, that sort of thing, and then the Y absorbs, you know, the oversight and the payroll. And
so whoever is in charge of approving that, I want to give them kudos and encourage them, whatever we can encourage them to continue that funding, because I think that's one of the greatest city programs.
I'd also like to chip in. Melissa was talking about the relationships built downtown, that for a lot of kids, it's a great opportunity to not only have, and I'm not going to say that all kids are working it hard, and that's something that we deal with, that part of it is instilling a work ethic and kind of trying to explain this is what the world is. We want workers. They don't not. Yeah. I'm going to sit back and do as least as I can, you know?
Right.
But the relationships that are built downtown, kids have gotten jobs downtown. I think I was just having this conversation with someone last week at the Y, the amount of people that remain employed with the Y because they got their foot in the door with Clean Team. Two of my teen center staff started out on Clean Team. Our aquatic director, Jeremy Nestor, started out on Clean Team. Sam Bolf, who's our billing specialist and worked at camp as a great camp counselor for a number of years, started out on Clean Team. So I think kind of the ability to kind of
cultivate,
get known and build a reputation for yourself at a young age, it's a good opportunity. At the same time, we have a lot of conversation that says picking up other people's trash, the novelty wears off pretty quick. You know, so
hey, it's first job. It's you know what I mean. Like the best. That's the best thing you can do. If you know you do that kind of, you know, tough kind of labor or whatever, and you say, you know, I want to get a little education, or I want to work a little harder and not have to pick up trash and let the other, you know, the kids come up. But it's, you know, my dad, you know, was fixing, you know, trail loads of broken fish boxes come down here. Me and Frank would stay all day long in the sun.
Yeah.
But, you know, that's where you get your, that's the
it's
best lessons you can learn.
There's a good diligence and the dignity of hard work. And I think that's there's not enough opportunities where kids are pushed through the comfort zone to a point where they're like, this really isn't fun. That's right, it's not
that's
fun.
That's right, exactly.
It's get not fun education. At all, but when you hold that first paycheck, yeah. you're going to get goosebumps because, yeah. you know, that $50, $100 that you got in your hand is so much more meaningful and worthwhile than the $50 somebody handed you for Easter or whatever.
Absolutely, you know? Absolutely. Well, awesome. I don't know, thanks for coming. I know you guys got to get to work, but I think we got a lot of information in there. And there's a lot of good, positive information. I appreciate you guys coming down.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
All right.
For Toby, thank you. Pat,
great.
Melissa Cox, Rick Dowsett, it's Joey Schumataro. Everybody have a great day, y'all.